Is going to be coming back to order from recess, so if you could make your way to the council chambers.
Okay, let me give it to the acting one sec here. Why is Buzz Beetle there? I don't know. Thank you.
No problem. Hey.
663, that we've got about 50 people have been waiting here since the morning. They weren't told what time, so they got here at 8. She says most of them are still here.
663. So we're going to get through my stuff. Is that part of my stuff? Oh, it is part of my stuff.
Yes.
Okay. They're going to have to wait. Sorry. We'll go with 2 minutes on those. City Council will come back from recess. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Carla, would you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 654?
Create the City of Portland Local Business Enterprise Purchasing Rewards Program to promote the growth and economic vitality of businesses located within the City of Portland.
Thank you. Appreciate the council consideration of this resolution. The Portland-based businesses pay Portland fees and taxes, and they should be afforded every opportunity under the law to procure or be the place that we, city government, procure our goods and services. So today we're considering a resolution that moves forward a reform to the procurement of goods and services by providing purchasing rewards to local firms as defined in the resolution. We will hear from Skip and Jim Van Dyke the legal constraints involved in putting together a local purchasing rewards program. But the reason to try, as difficult as it is that for every $100 invested in a local business, a locally owned business, $68 are returned through taxes, payroll, and sourcing from other locally owned business. In contrast, if you were to spend $100 on a nationally based business or business based elsewhere, $43 stay in the local community. I want to be very clear. We support and love both businesses, but again, businesses that are headquartered here pay our taxes, our fees, and deserve every consideration. These are statistics based on a report done by the Department of U.S. Department of Labor. This program also, the establishment of a local business enterprise designation for potential contractors and existing contractors, will implement our MW and ESB sheltered market policies in place. That's minority women and emerging small business designated contractors. And we have Skip, who is going to provide us with more detail and answer questions. Skip Newbury.
Jim Van Dyke and from the City Attorney's Office and Jeff Baer apparently are a little bit delayed, but I'll try and do my best to answer any questions that any of you have regarding either the legal or policy implications of this proposed resolution. As you mentioned, Mayor, it's a great summary of what exactly we're attempting to do here, which is to work within the constraints imposed by state and federal law to try and promote local businesses where possible with the city's purchasing policy. This proposed resolution complements the existing programs that we have to assist businesses locally in their attempts to engage in procurement with the city, with city contracts. That includes, as you mentioned, the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Program, as well as the state program that relates to the sheltered market program as well.
Questions from council? Questions from council. How do we make sure that we're not gouged? The flip side, how do we make sure we're not gouged by local businesses?
Yes, that's a great question. There, if you look at the second page of the resolution, under the section that says, now therefore be it resolved, both bullets towards the end contain language that addresses that concern specifically. It says that such as lack of available contractors or unreasonable prices. So it's essentially a limitation that allows the Bureau of Purchases to decide to look elsewhere. In other words, not at local firms if they find that the firms locally that are available are charging unreasonably high prices.
And how do you define unreasonable prices?
That would be a question for Jim Van Dyke. We posed that to him as part of the changes that were made as part of the substitution, which addressed the price gouging issue.
Okay. So is he's not here. So is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
Mayor Adams.
No one signed up.
May I suggest, I understand there's a substitute resolution. Before taking testimony, may I suggest that you move that, please?
Thank you, Ms. Reese. I move the substitute.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded on the substitute. Any discussion on the substitute or anyone that would like to testify on the substitute? We're on item 654.
54.
Oh, 654.
I just want to say what the substitute does.
Mayor, as I understand it, the substitute includes some language about some qualifications in the resolved, and it goes to the question of price and available contractors, based on some conversations you've had with colleagues. So that's been seconded, so I'm a strong supporter of that.
All right. Carly, can you please call the roll on the substitution motion?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
I greatly appreciate Mayor Adams and the staff being willing to work with us. Giving us a heads up on the amendment on the language, and part of what the amendment does is making sure that emerging small businesses have a good shot at getting the contracts. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Substitute is approved. So Jim, can you speak to, or Jeff, I'm not sure who, how do we make sure that this is not abused by a local business in terms of price gouging? What is the definition of unreasonable prices?
Well, that may depend on the individual circumstances, but Jeff has considerable flexibility under his existing authority under code to set policies and regulations. So I think this is one of those instances where my recommendation would be to let the program proceed and to address the problems as they arise rather than try to guess every possible permutation of facts that may occur.
And Jeff, how would you approach the conversation, discussion, or the issue within the procurement process around reasonable or unreasonable prices from a local vendor?
What
our plan is to do is to work with the bureaus to do a competitive solicitation process, but focus it in on inviting those local firms in to participate. So we'll use the competitive process to really drive the pricing and the selection to those who are the lowest responsible cost from who we choose to select and invite in to bid on it.
And just for the background of those people watching, this is as much as we can do legally. And if you could, one of you, sort of give legal constraints 101, a quick summary of that for our education, that'd be helpful as well.
Sure. State law drives most of what we can do in this area. And state law says that for most construction projects and for goods and services contracts above $150,000, we have to formally advertise those projects. And it also puts restraints on the city's ability to qualify what bidders we can look at and what we can't look at. State law doesn't give us the option of only looking at local businesses, but state law does give us that option on goods and services contracts below $150,000. They're not required to be competitively advertised. They're required to be competitive in the sense that we have to call up and get at least three price quotations from various firms for these contracts, but it doesn't dictate where we go to find those firms. So we have flexibility in that regard.
So construction contracts, this would not, that doesn't qualify for this effort based on the legal state and federal constraints?
To the extent that if there are some construction contracts where we can seek informal price quotations, we could do that. But generally speaking, those are going to be under $100,000. It would be very, very small. You know, almost any construction you do is above $100,000 these days. So it really wouldn't be very effective, I don't think.
And I would just add to that, this resolution does not cover construction projects because we have an exemption under our city code that anything under $200,000 in construction project related, we give first sourcing to our sheltered market program participants. So that's where we do a sheltered market contract with those firms who are minority women and emerging small businesses.
And local.
And local.
I'm looking for the reference to unreasonable prices. Maybe I don't have the right substitute in front of me.
It's in the amended.
Did you get the first? You don't have the amended in here.
Yeah, I don't have the amended.
So it's in the original.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And what's the volume? What's a guesstimate of the volume that is in this sort of purchase of goods and services contracts that are less than $150,000?
I think it's a large number of contracts. I don't know the dollar volume in an aggregate sense, but I can certainly provide that for you. I don't know off the top of my head.
Additional discussion with council?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to be a co-sponsor of the amended resolution, and I just want to talk through a couple points just to make sure people are clear. There's a strong sense in our community, a strong set of values around buy local, about supporting local businesses, keeping dollars here, supporting people that, frankly, pay our taxes, you know, volunteer at our schools, are here. Now, historically, our tax structure has provided an unlevel playing field because of the business license tax, business license fee, with other jurisdictions. And we had a taste of that, I think, recently on the matter before us on purchasing some automobiles and where and what dealers we'd use and cost structure. So as I understand this resolution, what we are putting into place is a limited program, limited, as the mayor has pointed out, by the constraints of state law, that will give us the flexibility to reward, to contract with good corporate citizens who are local businesses. And the safety valve for the taxpayer is we have a screen here to make sure that the prices are otherwise reasonable. Is there consideration, Jeff, to report back to council within a year or 6 months or a year as to how this program is operating, and particularly how MWESB participation levels are, and sort of some comparative information about cost?
Yes. And we publish an annual report that kind of highlights some of our contracting through the previous fiscal year activity. And so we actually have the most recent one on our website right now. We'll continue to do that. I think this is a perfect area that we could really kind of highlight specifically how this resolution was enacted and what was the result.
And I think we're looking, obviously, for the good news about, you know, folks that otherwise have not been able to participate on a level playing field, but also any recommendations of how we can continue to strengthen it. Thank you.
So I apologize. I stepped in a little late here. Skip was giving the overview, but this is fully consistent with state law. I think you were just saying that a second ago, Jim. Okay, and then the unreasonable price that's been added in there, so that would give purchasing director discretion to determine whether a price was unreasonable?
We would build that into our procedures to see, you know, if we're finding we're getting overinflated pricing on, you know, a particular commodity, then that gives us sort of an escape valve to get away from, get out of that requirement.
So we had discussed up front at one point in the policy formulation of this, and it came out of a good conversation with Commissioner Fish to put a percentage, and they convinced me that over the course of the year, this gives them the administrative authority to do that, but that it might be, gives them the flexibility to sort of figure that out.
As to unreasonableness? Is that
correct? Okay. Percentage over. Okay. And I was convinced, we got a great procurement shop and legal shop, and I was convinced they could figure that out on our behalf and report back to us, I think is another good concept from Commissioner Fish. Anything else from council? Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Would anyone seek to testify on council calendar item 654? Please call the roll.
Fish?
Well, Mayor, I want to thank you for taking the lead on this. This is the next, I think, logical step in the city's program of supporting homegrown businesses that are good corporate citizens and that have from time to time been disadvantaged because of an inequity between our tax structure, in particular our business taxes, and the tax structure of surrounding jurisdictions. It is limited in scale. It has been blessed as to legality by our crack legal team. It has a screen to ensure that to give some assurance to taxpayers that we're still getting a good deal and that we're not overpaying for the promotion of what we consider to be an important value of supporting local businesses. And within a year, we'll have a sense of how it's working and whether it needs to be fine-tuned. But I think it is timely, particularly in this downturn. I think it is reasonable in scope, and there are enough protections built in. I think that this is a good deal for the taxpayers. Again, thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
I appreciate the mayor's leadership on this. Aye.
Fritz?
I am very enthusiastic about supporting this. It actually directly addresses one of the issues I ran about in terms of spending city money within the city, and it's part of spending taxpayers' money wisely. We did a poll during my campaign, and over 60% of respondents, Portland voters, said that they support spending money in Portland, even if it costs a little more. And that's important because it means that our community understands how important it is to spend our money in Portland businesses and especially locally owned businesses. And so the resolution goes as far as it can under state law in requiring purchases of goods and services in Portland. And individual bureaus, which have direct purchasing authority up to $5,000, are also directed to purchase goods and services from businesses within the city. And I will make sure that my bureaus know of this improved and new process. I'm very excited about this. I think it's a good step forward, and thanks to Mayor Adams for making it happen. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank my colleagues for their questions and their contributions to this resolution. I want to thank Commissioner Fish and his team for suggestions to make it even better. We're very lucky to have Jeff and Jim and Skip and Kimberly and Clay focused on these issues, and it's something I've wanted to do, as Jim knows, for a very long time, so I'm glad to be in a position to help make it happen. Aye. Okay, can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 655?
Authorize emergency declaration for the procurement of projects funded by the 2009 local, state, and federal economic stimulus program and delegate authority to the purchasing agent to execute contracts funded under the program.
So I have a little bit of preamble, then we'll hear from Mr. Bauer on more details. As obviously everybody knows, we're in the midst of a national recession, and it's definitely come home to Portland. Since its peak in January 2008, the region has lost 44,000 jobs. Oregon's unemployment rate exceeded 12% in March, far above the national average of 8.5%. And the number of unemployed people in our region has gone from 60,000 to 140,000 just over the past 12 months. Our city's local jobs creation and business stimulus package, the state's Go Oregon package, and the Federal American Recovery and Reinvestment Act aim to address the recession in part through capital projects and public facilities and investments in infrastructure. These construction, renovation, and deferred maintenance of infrastructure buildings and other facilities create badly needed jobs, retain existing jobs, and inject money into our community. With the dire current economic conditions, these stimulus projects need to be moved through our procurement process more quickly than the traditional process allows, especially for those projects that rely on a season to complete their work, such as the summer season weather. Moreover, with the increased demands on our purchasing agents due to the stimulus projects and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act use it or lose it provisions, we risk missing substantial opportunities if we do not make sure our purchasing agents have the ability to implement projects as quickly as possible and responsibly and prudently as possible. So there are two sides to this coin. And the local stimulus task force we appoint will help ensure that the Bureau of Purchasing is able to move projects forward quickly and to maximize the uses of local, minority women, and emerging small businesses. Before I ask Jeff Baer to present the details of the ordinance, I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize the city team that is working hard to ensure we don't miss any opportunities through the federal stimulus program and that it is well coordinated with our state partners and with our local stimulus efforts. Catherine Levine from the Bureau of Transportation, Van Lee from the Bureau of Water, Greg Dreschler from the Bureau of Water, Chris Dirth from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and Dave Tews from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability deserve special recognition for taking on citywide portfolios outside their regular duties as ARRA project managers. Thank you for your work. And Stephanie Mendoza-Gray, Sheila Black-Craig, Jeff Baer, Ben Walters, Judy Tuttle, and Laurel Buttman are also lending their expertise to make sure we're following all the rules and working with our partners. I'd also like to recognize Kimberly Schneider, in my office, along with Sierra Stringfield and Kip and Clay for their work on this issue. Mr. Bauer.
Thank you. Council, for the record, I'm Jeff Baer, the Director of the Bureau of Purchases, and I'll make my comments real brief. This is really intended to expedite both the procurement or the competitive solicitation stage, but also includes the contracting process. And we are really experiencing a substantial increase in the number of construction projects coming from the various bureaus. I think you heard earlier from Bureau of Environmental Services, where Dean Marriott talked about the increased number of construction projects coming up over the next 18 months. We already have over $100 million in construction projects in various phases of bidding, contract award, notice to proceed, and actually shovel in the dirt at this stage. So we've got a number of them that are coming up. We're nearing the peak of the construction season. We have identified at least 67 construction projects that will be coming through our Bureau over the next several months. So I think this will really provide us with a more efficient process to really expedite this and get those projects and get the shovel in the dirt. We really intend to use the local stimulus task force as a way to help us make these decisions. Our decisions will be based obviously on transparency, accountability, fair, legal decision-making process. So with that, I will stop and address any questions you might have.
Well, just to amplify on one point you're making, the task force will be coming back to council after consultation with each of the offices with actually the membership, proposed membership for the task force that then will have to be approved by council. The membership will have to be approved by council as well. Discussion?
So I met with you several weeks ago and talked about the need for a broad range of people on the task force. We're voting on this as an emergency ordinance today, so I'll just...
It doesn't actually populate the task force yet?
Right.
That'll come back in consultation with you. We'll come up with the names and come back to council for approval of the actual bodies on the task force.
Okay. So I'm comfortable with that. Thank you.
All right. Is anyone signed up to testify on 655?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Does anyone in the room wish to testify on council calendar item emergency ordinance 655? But we've worked so hard at it. Okay. Please call the roll for council calendar item 655.
Fish.
Congratulate everybody that's labored so hard to get to this point, including all the people the mayor recognized in his opening remarks, and pleased to support this ordinance. Aye.
Saltzman.
Yeah, I'm pleased to support this. This looks like a good way to get some of the federal state stimulus money flowing into projects sooner. Aye.
Fritz.
Currently, the purchasing has signature authority for contracts of up to $500,000. So changing the amount to anything less than $5 million wouldn't make very much difference on expediting the projects. That's why it's important to do this. It's important to do it as an emergency ordinance so that we can get going right away rather than taking 5 weeks. I am concerned about the makeup of the task force. The task force must be in place before any of the purchasing contracts are issued, and I know that we're all committed to having diversity on that task force, including some folks who are not involved in actually doing the contracting work or those kinds of things. Mayor Adams has done a really good job of setting up task forces and other advisory groups with a diverse interest, so I'm comfortable voting aye.
Adams.
Again, thanks to everyone for making this happen. You made it look easy. I think I've 2-3 meetings a week for, 4 months, 3-4 months. So on behalf of a grateful set of potential people who can get work from these contracts, thank you. Aye. 655 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance 656?
Amend Title 33, Planning and Zoning, to extend for a limited period the expiration date for approved land use decisions and related land use actions.
So this is coming back to council, and a quick recap for the few viewers that we have and those in the chamber. Many approved but unbuilt projects are stalled and facing expiration of their land use approvals thanks to the frozen or relatively frozen credit markets. Putting these projects through the land use decision process again a second time means additional cost and delay. Which can another factor that can exacerbate the city's economic recovery. When the economy gets going again, we want to be ready, and this proposal will keep projects in the pipeline longer and allow a faster start when the economy improves. This is a common sense proposal, one that will help us climb out of these tough economic times together, and I want to thank Douglas Harding, the Bureau of Development Services, and Eric Engstrom of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for all their work. I also want to thank Commissioner Randy Leonard. He helped push this item forward and loaned us a lot of great Bureau of Development Services staff. This is our second trip back. Does council have any questions for staff? Is there anyone that would like to testify on council calendar item 656? Carla, would you please call the roll?
We have the amendment to change the date.
It looked like because this was heard as an emergency on May 6th, staff had recommended by memo dated March 14th that they would like the effective date changed, so that would need to be amended before you take the vote. Do you have that memo in front of you? If not, I can read the proposed amendment.
Yes, it says to change May 13th, 2009 to verbiage that says 7 days from its passage by the City Council. So it's been moved by me. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to make the change as I just read into the record. Anyone wishes to testify on this proposed amendment? Unless there's council discussion, please call the roll on the amendment.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment is approved. Contained a memorandum May 14th. Can you please call the roll on the underlying emergency ordinance?
Fish.
Thanks to Commissioner Leonard and Mayor Adams for their work on this proposal. We are, as everyone knows, in the midst of the worst economic downturn in my lifetime. To put that in context, I turned 50 recently, so I can at least speak to 50 years of economic slowdowns. This is the worst economic calamity in my lifetime, and this council has set an ambitious goal of putting people back to work and jumpstarting our local economy. And we can do it through a number of tools, and we've, over the past few months, we have, through the budget process, through ordinances and resolutions and other means, demonstrate our commitment to creating good family-based jobs for people who live and work here. And this is yet another demonstration of our commitment to helping improve the business climate and give people chances to work. And by making these common sense changes, we are allowing folks that have work in the pipeline a little more breathing room to get their financing and other materials together. I can tell you as the housing commissioner that it would not matter today whether you were, your name was Warren Buffett, you'd still have trouble getting financing for your projects. And you should not be penalized and have all of your hard work go up in smoke simply because you can't meet our existing timelines. So this, to me, is a common sense approach which will help, we hope, over time, get our economy moving again. And I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Douglas Hardy and other planning staff and BDS staff for the additional information. It appears that there were about 2,500 land use decisions and 200 pre-applications that were rendered, and planning staff estimates that approximately 4% of all decisions during this time period will have the opportunity for an extension. Most likely, fewer than that will take advantage of this possibility. The purpose of the timelines was to ensure that changes to situations and to the code are incorporated into new applications. And I agree with Arnold Rockland's assessment of the risks and the public purpose and the fact that the economy will change when conditions are ripe and then development will continue. But as long as there are no significant changes to the code under which the development decision was rendered, the extensions will have little or no impact on the public interest, which is what the process was intended to protect. So because this amendment will sunset, because it appears that the number of applications affected will be small, and because the public interest is not endangered as long as there are no significant code changes that affect these types of decisions, I vote aye. Thank you.
Adams.
Aye. 656 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance 657?
Amend contract with the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization to facilitate the Portland Multnomah Youth Corps Internship Program.
This is another 100-day items coming from my office. This amends an existing contractual relationship with the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, IRCO, to move from a program that used to be called the Summer Youth Employment Program to the Portland Multnomah Youth Corps Program. And it is a pilot that hopefully with additional federal stimulus money next year, we will be able to expand. It provides tuition, paid credit recovery, summer school at Portland Public Schools, summer scholars program. Those that are involved also get job skills training provided by IRCO and six weeks of paid employment as interns in city bureaus. It starts out with 25 rising ninth graders, rising 10th graders, those leaving ninth grade next year, and it is a partnership with the Portland Schools Foundation, the Connected by 25 program, which is the basis of which is a four-year partnership between Portland Schools Foundation, local school districts, and the Gates Foundation to develop programs locally that keep our youth in high school and make sure that they complete high school. Are there any questions on Council Calendar Item 657? Is there anyone that has signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
This is one of a number of initiatives that the mayor has launched and that is either leading through his office or in partnership with a number of colleagues that is designed to expand opportunities for youth this summer. Commissioner Saltzman and I are pleased that teen programming was recommended funding to the tune of $500,000, the mayor's recommended budget, which will create additional opportunities for young people through our community centers during this summer at a time when we're anticipating a significant spike in youth unemployment. But there's a lot of other things we're doing, from free programs to free movies and concerts and other things. This is another piece of that fabric. It's well conceived. We're pleased to support it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Good job. Aye.
Leonard.
Nice work. Aye.
Fritz.
I'm glad to support this as a pilot project. It is relatively expensive at $103,000, but it's a pilot project. It's managed through ERCO, which is one of our valued community partners, and I'm pleased to support it. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Thanks to Jane Ames and Reese Lord and the education team in the mayor's office. Can you please read the title for Resolution 658?
Establish environmental sustainability goals for city government operations.
All right. I want to recognize all the good work that has been done by the city bureaus over the years to make Portland's government operations as sustainable as possible. But there's always room to improve. And recently, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability undertook an inventory and an analysis, a diagnostic of how to make Portland government's operations even more sustainable and a way to better measure our progress. Hardworking staff across the bureaus have helped put these citywide goals together and bureau goals together, and I want to thank them, particularly Michelle Krim of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for shepherding this assessment and pulling these goals together. We're going to hear from Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Michael Armstrong. I'm the Senior Sustainability Manager for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I just want to take a moment and note that about 2.5 years ago, City Council established the Sustainable City Government Partnership, which was an interbureau effort to move forward sustainability in city practices across the board. Through that effort, each bureau now has its own sustainability plan. Those were put into place about 1.5 years ago, and each has now been updated. As the mayor noted, we recently conducted an assessment looking at energy use, water use, waste and recycling, and paper use all across the city. And I think we have a number of generally positive trends. There's also quite a bit of room for improvement. With the goals proposed here, we're suggesting that these be goals that guide those bureau plans as they are revised and implemented over time. A couple of these are already in place through resolutions adopted over the years. What we would do here is bring them all together and round them out a bit. So we have resource goals for all of the key resource conservation areas. So the 5 proposed goals, the first is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from city operations 10% from 1990 levels by 2015. The second deals with stopping growth in the amount of solid waste that we generate and increasing recycling to 85% of all waste that's generated at city facilities. The third deals with paper use, and the proposed goal is to reduce the use of printer and copy paper, sort of standard office paper, by 5% from 2008 levels and make sure that we're using 100% post-consumer content, recycled content, by 2015. The fourth goal is to manage half of all stormwater that falls on city sites using sustainable stormwater methods by 2040, and that's a goal that's brought out of the Greater Green Initiative. We are still establishing a baseline for where we are today, and that's one reason we don't yet have a near-term goal. We would like to get there, but for now we have the 2040 goal on the horizon. And then the fifth proposed goal is water efficiency, and it essentially is proposed that the city use no more water by 2015 than we used in 2007. So we need to continue to become more efficient as we add city facilities, we broaden the services that are provided, and do so in a way that doesn't require more water. The proposal is that bureaus would use these goals as guideposts as they revise their plans over the years. Excuse me. And we're recommending that on an annual basis, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability work with the Office of Management and Finance to update the inventory of where we are in terms of all of these resources so that we can have annual reports on our progress toward these goals. So I know a couple weeks ago, a couple weeks ago we had the revised City Green Building Policy at Council, and the Water Bureau, Parks Bureau, and OMF were here identifying some of the projects they've worked on. We had hoped that Dean Marriott from BES could be here today. I think he may have gotten called into other things from the time, but certainly BES has been a real example to many of the bureaus as well. So there's been a lot of great work that's gone on in city operations, and we're looking to put these goals out there so we have some guideposts as we go forward.
And this begins council reporting to council on an annual basis?
That's correct.
Okay. All righty. Discussion from council.
I just have a question. Why is our goal for getting to 100% post-consumer recycled paper out to 2015? Why can't we do it faster?
I'm going to turn to Michelle Krim, who knows a lot more about this than I do. Do you want to come forward with your trusty guide dog in training?
Doc has to learn how to.
Is that your guide dog?
No, my guide dog is at his house, and he gets to come stay with me for a week. So we're trading.
Guide dog swapping.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the reason for that primarily is there are a lot of places where we need to do a little more research to try to find alternatives for some applications of paper, but predominantly it's that 5% reduction goal that is the 2015 mark. We could probably hit the 100% recycled content goal much sooner. There are several bureaus that are fairly close to that, so it's more, you know, just applying that as the standard across the city, but that 5% reduction is definitely will take us a little while to get there.
Thank you.
Other discussion from council? Does anyone wish to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Seeing no one wishes to testify, Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Good job. Good goals. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Aye.
Adams?
Fantastic work. Really appreciate it. A lot of work to do for us. Aye. Approved. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 660?
Vacate a portion of Northwest Princess Drive, northwesterly of Northwest Pleasant Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Dee Walker with Right-of-Way Acquisition for the Bureau of Transportation. I actually have the next two items on the agenda.
Can you go ahead and read the title for Council Calendar Item 661?
Vacate a portion of Alley, Block 2, Cook's Edition, north of North Revere Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Are either one of these, is there controversy involved with either one of these?
No, there's one person that's going to be signing up on the second, that has signed up to speak on the second street vacation.
Yep.
The first one that I'd like to talk to you about is Princess Drive. The owner petitioner is Truck Terminals Incorporated. They own the property to the northeast of the proposed vacation area. The reason that they would propose this area to be vacated is for consolidation of property. And I understand that it's for a possible future parking lot. There were really no conditions or objections. The Park Bureau required an access easement over the area because the Park Bureau owns the property to the southwest, and so they need to be able to get to their property for maintenance activities for city employees. Currently, the right-of-way is unimproved, and Planning Commission had no objection and recommended approval.
The next item.
The next item is the portion of the alley in Block 2, Cook's Edition. And the owner petitioner is Madrona Park, LLC. The reason for the vacation is, again, consolidation of property for future development. Although they do not have anything planned right now, there's been some research and studies done, but that's as far as it's gotten. So they would like to get it vacated now. So when they do, when the economy turns around and they do put in for development, they won't have to wait for the vacation to be done. The conditions or objections development review required a public access easement over the alley until the future development happens for the property owner for access. There were no other objections. Currently the alley is improved and the Planning Commission had no objections and recommended approval.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the City Council?
Why is the access easement on the Princess Drive, why is it only for employees and contractors? If it's adjacent to public lands, wouldn't we want to let anybody access those public lands, perhaps?
From what I understand, they already have access to it, and this is just for maintenance activities, and that was a condition that came right from the Parks Bureau. So, again, I'm actually standing in for Teresa Talbot, who is a project manager for both of these vacations. So I don't know the exact reason,
but that's what it was proposed.
So if you could ask that person to get back to me before the vote next week on that question, I'd sure appreciate it. Thank
okay.
you.
I'm not sure I understood the question, Commissioner Fritz.
The public access easement is specified to be only for city employees and contractors. So I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to have a public access easement for the
You're
public.
Talking about the first of the two?
Yes.
My guess is it has something to do with not wanting to encourage people to trespass in order to gain access through private property. But, I mean, I'd like to know the answer.
To the park?
To the park, yeah. Okay. And I think that raises, people don't have an easement to come through private property to access. And
right.
Might raise some liability issues, but I'd like to know the answer.
And they want to turn this into a possible parking lot. And I'm sure the public has access off of.
Okay.
Probably somewhere off of Regent Drive.
Thank you.
Additional mm-hmm. council discussion? Is anyone signed up to testify for either 660 or 661?
661, we have David L. Edwards.
Mr. Edwards. Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Good afternoon.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
David Edwards, the owner of the property on the map, TL 4600. And
yours is 661.
Right? 661.
Yep. Okay.
TL 4600 is my property, 924 North Revere Street.
That great grassy area off Mississippi.
Yes. Okay. For over 100 years, the only vehicular access, horse and buggy and otherwise, has been up the alley. And I was not involved in the signature process. And there wasn't a public hearing on the at the planning meeting in December. So this is my only opportunity to express my views. Since I'm the only property that's directly affected by this vacating and the only house on Revere Street, I think my input is appropriate. So I have two exhibits. One is a stipulation of easements. And the second is a drawing as to design of the improvement that will be made from Michigan on Revere Street. I did have one conversation with Robert Haley in transportation indicating the petitioner would build an improvement on Revere Street for vehicular access when the development was begun and the alley vacated. And for reasons of optimizing green footprint, I request that the Revere Street improvement be an abbreviated one. In other words, just to my property line. And basically, that's my
So your house is that house in the center of the triangle?
No. It's the east 32 feet of Lot 12, I believe, is the description of it.
If you look on your map where the alley vacation
yeah.
intersects with North Revere Street,
mm-hmm.
His house would be the southwest
south.
Corner.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yes, okay. That's it. And my drawing also has the location of the Quest facilities requesting easement and also the city water line in the Revere Street easement. And respectfully, I'd like to submit these for the record.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the vacation you're showing us just to the Revere Street?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you're okay with this?
No.
I'm okay with the vacation of the alley as so long as the petitioner provides the vehicular access on improvement on Revere Street from Michigan.
So would you be comfortable with the condition of approval that the vacation happens when the Revere Street improvements are done?
Yes.
Thank you.
And requesting that the Revere Street improvement be an abbreviated one, in other words, just to my property line.
That we may not be able to
check out.
That would be an issue with transportation. Yeah, I realize that there's no design on the property yet
right.
for
improvement. Okay. Yeah.
And Bob Haley did put in his response that when future development comes in, that will be a condition of having to improve part of North Revere Street. We're leaving an access easement over the vacated alley portion for access for, I'm sorry, what is your last name?
Edwards.
Edwards, for Mr. Edwards. And then at the time of development, then other things will have to take place. They'll have to improve North Revere Street. I believe Bob said it was 3/4 improvement to provide him permanent access. And also the alley, there will be an alley that will be created just on the west side, connecting Michigan from the alley to Michigan Avenue. So there will be some things that happen with the development as part of a condition of their permit.
So are you okay with all those conditions? Do they meet your needs?
Yes, they do. Again, requesting that the Revere Street improvement be an abbreviated one, allowing us a bigger green footprint in our front yard.
I think that would probably be decided during the land use review rather than in this case.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. All right, these move, unless there are additional testimony or discussion, these move to next week's regular council agenda for consideration and a vote.
Thank you.
Unless there are objections, I'd like to move 662 to be postponed until the regular council agenda on May 27th. No objections.
Wait, 662?
662.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
My ordinance 662.
Right, okay.
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
So ordered. I also need to entertain a motion from a member of the City Council for an evening hearing on June 18th for consideration of the Hayden Island Community Plan.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Anyone wishes to testify on this motion? Carla, please call the roll on an evening hearing, June 18th, to consider the Hayden Island Plan.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you read? Please read the title for council calendar item 663.
Accept bid of Mountain Cascade, Inc. for the Portsmouth Force Main Segment 1 project for $28,149,491.
Mr. Baer.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, Member of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is a purchasing agent report to council recommending award to Mountain Cascade, who is a contractor out of Livermore, California, for the BES Portsmouth Force Main Segment 1 project in the amount of $28,149,491. And to give you some background on some of the events that transpired on this particular solicitation, we received 9 bids. They ranged anywhere from the low bid of $28 million up to $43 million. The difference between the low bid and the second low bidder is $722,172. We have Mountain Cascade, as indicated in their good faith effort, the subcontractor participation. We have local minority business enterprise participation of $8.9 million. Local women business enterprise participation at $286,000. And emerging small business participation of $414,000, which represents 75.3% of the total subcontracting dollars on this particular project. The Mountain Cascade does have a current city business license, their current EEO certification, and they are in full compliance with our equal benefit requirements. Just so you know that we did receive a protest from both the second low bidder, which is Moore Excavation, and the third low bidder, James W. Fowler Contractor. And the complaints were primarily focused on using a test of complete and absolute compliance over what city code requires, which is a substantial compliance with our requirements. And both protests were denied, and subsequently, James Fowler Company withdrew their protest. So I'll stop here and ask if you have any questions to answer. We also have a representative from BES is here, Paul Gribben, and then, of course, Jim Van Dyke from City.
And we have how many people signed up to testify?
15.
And we also have the contractor here as a representative, too, if there are any questions with them.
So if it's okay with council, if we could hear the testimony and maybe revisit staff, conversations with staff. All right, Carla. And given the, you've waited a long time, so you have available to you 3 minutes, but we have found that what can be said in 3 minutes can be said in two. So we reward anyone that can come in at two, but you've waited a long time, so if you need all three, we'll take it. Or you can take it. Carla, would you please call the testifiers?
First three are Joe, I believe it's Azbeck, or Joey, Roger Moore, and Alan K. Elburn.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I'm Joey Azbeck. I'm counsel for Moore Excavation, the second low bidder. This is Roy Moore, the president of Moore Excavation, and Alan Cal Coben, the vice president of Moore Excavation. The city RFP mandated that bidders contact five MWESB sub-bidders in any category that they were not going to self-perform, and that the bidder contact the MWESBs in those same categories who were at the pre-bid conference. At the pre-bid conference, the city officials emphasized that not complying with this item, with this requirement, would render their bids non-responsive. Mountain Cascade contacted a total of four MWESB sub-bidders in the drill and boring category, two of which showed up at the pre-bid conference. Mountain Cascade contacted two sub-bidders in the hazmat removal category. The city says that this is okay. The staff says that this is okay because there were only five qualified MWESB bidders in drilling and boring and three in hazmat removal. This statement by the city is untrue. Our letter to you shows that there were 11 qualified MWESB bidders in drill and bore and 10 in hazmat removal. And I have a little handout that I'd like for each of you to look at that sets out the qualified MWESB in each category. There are 11 in drilling and boring and 10 in hazmat removal. Moore and myself have consistently been told that purchasing's first decision was to reject the bid of Mountain Cascade, and this is consistent with everything that purchasing said at the pre-bid conference and consistent with what they have continued to say at subsequent pre-bid conferences. Due to some interplay between purchasing and the city attorney's office, they have changed their mind and they decided to take a California contractor who was a low bidder, who did not comply with the good faith efforts requirements, and we're here to object. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
You want to go next?
Yeah, I'm going to wait till the end, till all my people have talked.
Oh, okay.
At the mandatory pre-bid meeting for this project, I personally asked a question for the benefit of all bidders that were in attendance. And that question was, if a prime contractor fails to contact five MWESB firms, in addition to the pre-bid attendees in each division of work they intended not to self-perform, would they be non-responsive? And the answer was yes. I do not understand why we're here.
Who gave you that answer?
Purchasing. Yeah. Kathleen Brennis. That seemed very clear to me, and this was not a clarification but a confirmation of the requirements of the good faith effort program. Since this intent to award, Moore Excavation is asked in writing to purchasing, what is substantial compliance and would it be enough for future projects? Recently on the Powell Butte project that bid last week, they issued an addendum saying substantial compliance with city code. But 2 days prior to that, at the mandatory pre-bid for Selwood Interceptor, purchasing indicated substantial compliance would not be enough. To say the least, we are really confused. How do we continue to bid projects? What's going on? That's what we really want to know. Prior to this project, all bidders knew exactly what was required and what would happen if you failed to comply with the good faith effort program. You would be considered non-compliant and your bid would be rejected. This does not seem to be the case anymore. It's the responsibility of the bidding contractor to exhaust all resources in searching subcontracting opportunities for MWESB firms. To quote Raleigh Lewis with the State of Oregon, and this is his quote in an email to my office, to ensure that entities searching firms have the largest possible list to select from, the directory was designed to search for firms using the following approaches.